9 out of 10 parts they produce fail. They spend between $20,000 to $250,000 per part to produce it. If something doesn't work fundamentally, we just pull back, regroup, and do something else.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Breakout CEO Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Holman, and I'm so glad to have you here with us today again to hear about these awesome stories from cool startup founders and CEOs who are they're going down the same path that all of you guys are going down. They might be a little bit further ahead, or maybe they're behind, but they've had a few experiences that are in front of you on your path. So it's great to hear these stories and learn from them and how we can apply them in our lives. So today we get to learn from Pete Polyakov and hear his story. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, very, very glad to have you. And as we were doing some questions before the show, I was trying to figure out what your background is. I love the background there. It's very cool.
Thank you so much. I was born in USSR. One thing, USSR was bad because of many things, but one thing what they kind of did good, they gave education free to every single person who wants to study.
Yeah.
So I got a little experience in architecture, film, and philosophy. And, then applied this knowledge, through my life.
I love it. Probably played into your business today. You're running at least one business, maybe two, right? You're running Mods Nation and you're running Arvion.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Second one is accidental one, but it just happened.
Tell us what each are and then explain to us what you mean by accidental.
Well, a few years ago, I went to SEMA to just understand what is going on in the professional industry. And later on, I realized one thing you should do when you go into such places, you need to have a car at the booth. So people would walk by, look at the car and say, oh my goodness, such an amazing car. And that's a great moment to start the conversation about
because SEMA is the car show, right? Like that's where
absolutely
for those who haven't been, I have not been, but I've heard of it. And you're going to a car show, you're seeing everything about cars, right?
Absolutely. And every man a little bit a kid. So, everyone goes to look for the cars, everyone. And when I realized that, I said, well, we definitely need some car at the booth. And so, because my background in architecture, I said, well, I definitely can design a car because usually architects, they design buildings and they make a lot of money, or they design super yachts and they make no less amount of money. I never built anything except a shed in the backyard. Yeah. And so, nobody invited me to do super yachts. So I said, I can make a car, that's for sure. I did that and just to support Mods. And what happened at the booth, people start to come in and they start to ask me questions, who manufactured that? And that's kind of different question from who designed that, who's behind that build.
Yeah.
Actually, they thought it's a manufactured car. And
you designed and built the car? Yes. I've got a friend who said, hey, yeah, I got a car in my basement right now. I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, I bought this kit and it's wintertime here in Utah, so there's snow. So I put it in my basement and I'm going to, build it in pieces and take it out. So he built a kit car. What do you mean that you made a car?
Right. So I started from a piece of paper. I said, well, any proper design and what philosophy and architecture a little bit teach you, and it's a little bit easier to understand when you in such areas, architect does not design a wall or a little door handle without designing buildings. So you need to zoom out a little bit.
Okay.
When it comes to design as a discipline, you always zoom out a little bit and look the entire composition, not just a piece. And unfortunately, what is happening at SEMA, you see a lot of cool separate parts put together and it creates something, not all the time as a single expression, but more just kind of salad in a way.
Okay.
And I didn't want to do that. Exactly. And I didn't want to do that because I said, well, I definitely need to design something that will attract people to stop by. And I compete with the amazing custom shops. So, you know, and I said, I need to design something fundamental, which I did. I designed it on a piece of paper. I learned how to build cars. I learned how to weld and many other things. So I sculpted the car first, like literally from clay. I designed I sculpted from scratch, then created the body parts, then put it together. And my team was helping me along the way.
Yeah.
And we learned a lot about that. But it was just a fun project. It never was, you know, like custom shop situation.
But this was not just a, was this just a model that you would bring in and set there? Or was this an actual functioning car?
Absolutely fully functional car, yes. It was based off Porsche 911. It was based off Porsche 911, but the entirely different design.
Wow, that's quite the undertaking. So you're at the booth. What was the company there that you were representing at the booth? And you said, hey, I gotta have a car, not just any car. I'm gonna make my own car, bring it in.
We were running with Mods Nation, and that's the company what helps people to look at modifications in 3D before you actually spend money.
Okay.
And the concept of that car is coming out of my own frustration. I'm on the driveway. I saved some money a few years ago, and I'm trying to fit the body kit on my old BMW. Okay. And it did not fit, and it didn't look anything like on the pictures I bought it from. And I think my wife walked outside. She looked at that and she said, well, congratulations, family money spent well.
Oh.
And I think it kind of hurt. And at that night, I kind of like walked back and, you know, look at all of that. And I said, well, what if I will, next body kit I will buy, what if I'll model it in 3D?
Mm-hmm.
And we look at from all the sides, right? And it worked. Then a few friends asked me to help them with their projects, and it worked for them as well. And lo and behold, we actually ended up with the factory producing these car parts and cars nonstop.
So you're a car guy. You're out there. You're buying kit parts or modification parts for your own vehicles, and you're putting them together, and it didn't work out. Your wife gave you maybe a sarcastic comment about the success of that or the value of that for the family. And so wait, so you're saying that after that happened, the next time you decided to buy a modification part from a different, you know, a third party manufacturer, whoever makes these parts, you said, before I buy it and install it, I want to just mock it up in 3D.
Correct.
So do you just ask the parts manufacturer and say, hey, can I get your files? Or do you build it yourself? Like, what does that mean to mock it up in 3D?
I looked at the pictures, and because I have extensive experience in 3D, in the early 2000s, I was making video games. By the pictures, I modeled. So I had the car as a foundation, and I modeled those body parts based off their pictures and applied on the car. Because all these pictures, they photoshopped. And the angle they choose, you know, usually the best possible angle, the best possible angle for the picture to be taken, right? Sometimes we see fashion models, and it doesn't really matter what angle you take a picture from, they're always going to look great. You put them in the garbage bag, and they're still going to look great. Okay. And that's why they models, right? And the same thing with the good car body parts. If they designed really well, that absolutely doesn't matter from what angle you look at them. They're still going to look great. But unfortunately, it doesn't happen all the time.
I see. So somebody might be making parts that look good from one perspective, but from a different perspective, your wife's going to walk outside and say, well, I can see it from this perspective, but when I look over here, I don't like it as much.
Just a quick note about our guests. I host the Breakout CEO podcast to share behind-the-scenes insights from scaling businesses. As an attorney, I see the real challenges leaders face long before success becomes public. But client stories have to stay confidential. So we invite guest CEOs to share their own moments of struggle and success. I'm so grateful to our guests and my team at Intellectual Strategies for making this show possible. Now, let's get back to the show.
You know, it was even worse. She walked to my backyard, and I think it was filled. It was dozens of thousands of dollars laying in the backyard. Body parts, bumpers, something what I took in, it didn't like. And unfortunately, there was absolutely no point to sell it because you would lose about 70% of the price.
Mm.
And so she just looked at that pile, and she said, oh, this thing going? Or I'm going. And I'm like, well, the problem is a little bit bigger than me, you know. So I said, what's the real problem there? And when I look at that, I said, well, I cannot make a right decision based on these pictures. Mm-hmm. And then I realized nobody can make a right decision based of just some pictures. Like, we probably had this experience and beyond car parts, right? And then I said, well, can 3D help? And that's what I did. And it really worked in my case and in case of my friends. And then later it just built in a way bigger thing than I expected.
What were you doing up to this point before you had this idea to start either as a hobby or as a, even as a business? Like what, because I think a lot of people would see that and they'd be like, they'd see the frustration and they'd say, well, that didn't work, but I'm just going to buy another part. I'll fix the part. And they want to get the car done, not necessarily turn the problem into a business. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, when people constantly started to bombard me with these questions, you know, I realized there is something beyond that. I didn't really look at that as a business yet, but I look at these body parts at my backyard, and I said, well, I wasted a lot of money, like a lot of money there and just laying there, and it's not helping anyone. And when I figure out what 3D really helps me to determine if it's good or not, you know, then, you know, it's kind of started to work, but I didn't look at that as a business yet.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went to SEMA, it was a kind of weird story. A few years ago, I went to SEMA just to, you know, look at the cars, as you said. But then I said, you know what? Let me go to SEMA and get a booth. And my idea was like, if I will ask, you know, some questions, maybe I will have some useful conversations. And that will help me a little bit, you know, to understand if actually whatever I figure out will help to professional industry at all.
Okay.
And I got, it was pretty much one booth left. And I was sitting between truck driver hats on one side. And another side was, I think it was gift cards for gas stations. Something like that. Nobody would go over there ever. And what happened, it's just, I couldn't like imagine. There was an insane crowd surrounding my little tiny table. First of all, people were trying some parts in the configurator. And they're like, oh, I would buy it. Oh, that's kind of cool. And then what really turned it into business when I start to see manufacturers walking by and see this behavior, what they see on this little tiny screen. You know, manufacturers, it's usually a family business, the entire thing. Like factory owner, it's an uncle. Distributors, it's some son and logistics nephew.
Yeah.
So it's a family class. And what their usual challenge is, 9 out of 10 parts they produce fail. So they pour that failure into one successful product. But we're talking about they spend between $20,000 to $250,000 per part to produce it and actually, you know, start to try and see if it, you know, if it actually sells. And if they can predict their series of products, how they will perform on a singular level, it's totally, it's sorcery. It's voodoo. It's just, you know, magic.
So was this your first year with a booth then at the at SEMA?
Yes.
And did you have your car there this year, or was that a later year?
Oh, no, it was way before that.
Okay, so you show up and you're between trucker hats and gift cards for gas stations, and you're drawing a crowd that otherwise wouldn't be in that section of the show.
100%, yes. And it just was empty.
And these manufacturers, so these are like aftermarket parts manufacturers are walking by. Correct. Saying, so you're telling me that the business to this point is people are just saying, hey, this type of sports car or this type of off-road vehicle, like let's come up with a part, let's make it, and let's see if people buy it. But they've dumped maybe $250,000 into the design and production. Yes. For that part,
logistics. Yes,
just to see if it's gonna just to test selling it. Is there has there not been a better way for them to test the market in more of like a lean manufacturing, lean startup type of approach, or it's just always been this way that where they're, hey, we make products, and as long as 1 or 2 out of 10 work, then we're okay.
Well, this industry is very outdated. It's almost like, you know, I think this industry lives almost in the 90s.
Okay.
And it was more or less the same approach. In some areas, they were trying to put some pictures on Instagrams and so on. But there was never really a signal per item where you can say, well, this thing definitely going to work. Because what they looked at that screen, I had a little tiny TV. It was some insane amount of money for rentals at SEMA. And I said, well, I'm not going to spend it. I just came here just to talk. Well, let me get like little tiny TV. And what they seen at that screen, it was the answer to their problem, because they would, you know, how much designer's salary cost, right? Maybe product manager. Yeah. And they can put these products online and see that how they perform. And if they see they collecting a lot, it's like Kickstarter. Singular item Kickstarter per every single product, right? And if they see it performs well, they produce it. And if it's not, they just move on. And then, you know, so they don't produce things what not going to sell. And by the way, that's kind of a weird thing. Loyalty to the brand raise because they don't produce bad things. You know, it's kind of like a weird thing.
Well, you've mentioned in some of our back and forth when we were scheduling this episode, you'd mentioned that one of the issues is people, you know, the consumers buy blind, right? Just like you did with a part that you're like, I saw one picture of it, I bought it. And then when I got it and installed it, I'm like, that's not right. It doesn't look it's not what I wanted. But what I'm hearing is that not only were the consumers buying blind, but the manufacturers themselves were building blind. They didn't quite know what people wanted. And that's a huge waste of money. Or a lot of effort to get to a part that would work. So, okay, so you're at SEMA, you're showing this off. What came of that experience, that show?
My product was not just entertainment for kids like me, right? Mm-hmm. But actually it was a demand meter where people can predict their sales before they do any moves. And that was the first realization. I had a little experience back then, you know, it's coming from like 25 years ago with the t-shirt business, kind of similar situation, but never at that scale. And then I realized I can solve the entire problem for manufacturers and for distributors. Just give them the tool, what they needed without breaking the chain, because it's a family clan business.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the biggest realization, what I can, where nobody could, but I can.
Yeah. Had you gone, was your intention when you went to that show to sell consumers on using your tool for their own parts? Or did you go there with the intention of saying, well, maybe manufacturers will want to use this? Or was that a discovery that you made at the show?
I just went there just to ask questions. You know, just even, I had no idea. I had no idea how that will land, because what I seen how manufacturers start to push each other with elbows to give me their business cards. It was kind of like a ridiculous picture in a way.
Wow.
When I went there, I went completely, you know, no expectations, completely blank. I just thought like, is there any use for that. I had some idea, but it just never was at that scale. Just I could never imagine.
Wow. Well, how long ago was that when you did your first SEMA show and had that great response?
It was about 4 years ago.
Okay. What and so since then, what's been the trajectory of the business?
Well, first thing I realized, there were like previous attempts to make something like this online, and all of them capped by like few hundred parts, and they pretty much failed. Because the effort we need to put into the business is just so ridiculously, enormous.
Yeah.
But, it just doesn't worth it.
What is the market like? Like how many manufacturers or how many different parts are there for different cars? Because I could imagine there are thousands of parts for different cars and thousands of different cars and different markets
millions.
That you're in.
Millions.
Yeah.
Millions. I kind of like chose the angle of aftermarket tuning parts, and the reason why I did it because it was narrow enough. Because if I would try to spill into car parts generally, I would be drowned there. It's absolutely. But even there, when I chose a very narrow angle, I had to solve a problem of manual 3D models production. And unfortunately, as you know, today producing images, generated images, or produce 3D models out of images, all that approximation. And because it's approximation, it does not really work because it's exactly the same situation as with those pictures I was buying it from.
Yeah.
So it didn't work there and it cannot really work with AI. But about 20 years ago, I was solving problems with online video games. How can I have 20,000 users on my server playing in exactly the same time?
Yeah.
And that was the era when we just came out of floppy disks. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of different constraint what you had to deal with. And I had to kind of solve conceptual problems on a different level at that time. And 20 years later, I'm dealing with this stuff. And suddenly, all that experience what I had 20 years ago helped me to solve the problem today, where I can almost automatically produce parts on my platform, and they will be absolute accurate size-wise. Yes, we had to scan over 600 cars manually. This was a lot of work. Mm. But the rest, it was more or less automatic. And now I think we're hitting 300,000 parts right now on the platform because of that.
Over a 250,000 parts on the platform. So wait, I want to understand this because what I'm understanding is that you've got to be really precise in what you're doing. Otherwise, you suffer the same problem as everything else. The phrase that I took away from something you had said earlier is close enough isn't good enough for what you need, right?
You need
precision. So help me understand better, though. maybe I might have zoned out just a little bit when you said floppy disk. I'm like, oh, that's a blast from the past. Been a long time. But what is it from your video game design 20 years ago that you were able to draw out of that experience and help you solve this problem today?
What I really learned back then, well, there is absolutely no problem exists what cannot be solved. And it became my skill because along the entire my life, I was solving problems where people say it's impossible. When I hear impossible, I'm like, okay, perfect. Let me work on that.
So and it wasn't a programming technique that you used in video gaming. This is the mindset that you
absolutely
achieved.
Absolutely.
Okay. That makes sense.
And that ended up in the technology. I knew what needs to be done technologically because you as an engineer and myself, calling myself as an engineer as well, I don't have a proper education for that. But, it's always it's always an ability to zoom out and sometimes ask yourself, are you really, is the problem what you see in front of you, is it the problem what you need to solve actually?
Yeah.
And most of the time it is not. And I think all of us as entrepreneurs, we constantly need to zoom out and look at the problem a little bit, you know, with the bigger picture.
Yeah. Do you think the engineers, because there are a lot of engineers who become entrepreneurs and it seems a little bit. What's that?
And musicians, for some reason.
And musicians. Oh, yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
That seems a little counterintuitive sometimes. It's like, you know, entrepreneurs or engineers, musicians, what is it about what they're doing? And maybe this is the key, right? The ability to look at the system as a whole, back out of maybe some of the details and see the larger picture. Is that something that you feel like you've got and you've seen in other people who are also building companies?
Successful, I think so.
Yeah.
Because when, you know, sometimes you're a little bit too much into weeds and you're too much inside of that problem. And, you know, philosophy kind of asks questions, why all is this for? You know, you need to kind of a little bit be at the distance of the problem in order to observe it, right? And I think architecture kind of does the same thing. And I think in engineers like yourself, you know, it's kind of like you look at the entire system and say, where's the actual problem? And sometimes it's not in that exactly moment or not in that place. But, you know, when you look at that, you say, maybe it's not even a question I need to solve.
Yeah.
Know, right now. So, yeah.
Do you feel like what's the trick for entrepreneurs who maybe don't have that skill set already to balance between the detailed work or the, you know, what maybe we might call the passion work? They jump into a new product and they're like, we're doing it no matter what, versus we'll just say the engineer who wants to step back and see the whole picture. Like how does a good entrepreneur balance those two modes? Does it really require two separate people to do it? Or is it just being able to recognize when you're in one mode versus another? What's been your experience with that?
Well, I think it's kind of like, I hear a lot when people talk about manager time and maker time.
Okay.
And I think if you kind of like, if you're creating yourself that space to be a maker when you work on strategy, I think you can balance these two. Sometimes people, you know, bring, you know, maybe manager. You know, I heard a lot, I don't know if it's true, but I heard a lot when people say, if you will hire CEO for yourself, your business is going to be in a way better place because you do too many things at the same time. Mm. But what I found, what if you create certain spaces in your schedule just to be a maker, not a manager, then, you know, you kind of can balance these two. And you obviously you should, because when it comes to startups, you know, it's always fire. It's always crisis. And, you know, it's a lot of, until you're in the clouds, there's a lot of manual handling. Otherwise, yeah, you know, it just can go sideways in a way. But yeah, Nobody will care about your business like you, except yourself.
For sure, for sure. Well, so with 300,000 parts designed, you know, what does that do for your business? How is your business doing today? What's the size of it? What you know, what stage would you say you're at, and kind of what are your next milestones coming up?
We're kind of spilling more into physical world when it comes to the platform itself. Okay. We recently launched, for example, Mods TV. It's a pretty much Netflix for cars.
Okay.
We just launched, you know, our car film festival as well. So we're like, actually, we're coming out of the entirely digital into more real world. And I think because what we do is actually, it's about car culture generally. It's not just about parts, you know. So there we do a lot of physical work right now. And plus all of us coming, most of us coming from the film industry. So it's kind of natural. And I think it creates deeper roots with the community. Because one of the, I cannot say the brand, you're my guess, but I met one of the executives on the very interesting sport car brand. You know, everyone knows about that one. And he told me, you know what you're doing right now, you're kind of flipping the entire market. And I'm like, why is that? And he told me, he said, you know what, when we sell these extremely expensive sport cars, our business is not about selling cars, it's about actually community.
Yeah.
Because that's literally our business. We're creating the community. Cars just, you know, the outcome of that. For the manufacturers, we're just creating the tools to ease their pain, not just as a demand, but create the entire system without breaking the chains, because that's really important. That one thing what I learned immediately when you ask me about what I, you know, learned from SEMA, I think that's really important to say. All the manufacturers, not necessarily automotive or not, most of them are family businesses. And you need to understand that when you do your product, you know. So if you're trying to break that chain, you're actually shooting in your own leg. So when I realized that, I said, well, I need to make sure I support that chain, not disrupt it, right? So on the factory side, we're just creating more and more opportunities for them to get the right data. And also a kind of like side effect, because for me, it's never was about money. And I said, you know, can I help every single person who wants to do something in the car business, start their own business tomorrow with no money? And I think that's also our platform can do. Because today, if you have just a little bit skills, you can put some idea online and, you know, see how it performs. And if it performs really well, you can come to at our platform to the manufacturer and say, well, I have this beautiful part I designed and, you know, it performs really well. How about we will manufacture that?
License and it out or
exactly. Help. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Have you seen people doing that within your community where they're coming to you?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. I'm doing it myself.
Yeah.
I'm doing it myself with our design house, you know, because we produce a custom Porsches, but not just that, but also some car parts for Porsche 911 and some, you know, classical muscle cars. And sometimes I test them out at the, you know, at the platform and see how it performs. If it performs well, time to manufacture that.
Time to make that. Oh, that sounds like
it.
So you've got a lot going on because you've created the platform, the tool to do this. You've created a library of all the parts. You're now creating some of your own parts. And you've got, you said, Bots TV and a sports car film festival, you said?
Yes.
So when did you realize that community really is the product or one of the products that you're selling? Because it's not just the platform anymore. Now it's you're really talking at a community level.
I think when there was a moment when I just created, what I created was just a tool.
Yeah.
It was just a tool just to avoid any silly mistakes and waste a lot of money.
So your wife didn't come out and make any comments about the car in the driveway anymore.
Not just that. She almost left me, you know, with this pile of parts. She said, what am I leaving at the garbage, at the junkyard? What's going on here? Right? And, you know, I realized what people want to share with each other, their own experience. And they want a lot of validation from the community. And they want to make right decisions when they making something and they're putting something together. You know, they kind of like, they want a lot of validation from the community or whatever they're doing with the car.
Yeah.
And when I realized that, I said, well, I need to give the community the ability to do so. And that's, you know, when it's spilled into the, you know, create a digital build and publish it and see how it works. It's kind of like demand meter for the community. Everyone says, well, it's a great build. I like it. So you're like, let me spend money because everyone will like what I just designed here, right? You didn't design the 3D model, but you just put it together in a way what everyone appreciates that. You know, it's kind of almost like, you know, everyone wants to be part of the family. Then another thing what I realized, most kind of doing that, when you buy a car and some of us go to some forums or Facebook groups, mm-hmm. and they say, hey, I just bought a car. You know, everyone welcome and so on. You drove it a couple of years, you changed your mind, and you bought another brand. And what you do it like again. You're like, hey, I'm here with the new car, right? Then I said, well, at our audience, why it should be like that? Because at the end of the day, the only really difference, you know, within our community, did you do something to your car? Maybe you just put a little tiny sticker on your car. It's already modification, right? So you don't need to change the high school, you know, in the middle of the year and just meet these strangers. There's no strangers. It's people you can be along the way the entire your life if you want to. So that started to put the roots, you know, where the community, that's the only thing. And I think kind of in a way I was building all my life, because video games, you know, at the scale of millions of users, it is actually communities. And, you know, from my experience, I think 6 people got married on some video game I built.
Oh,
in
really?
Real life. Yes. And you know what? I realized at that moment, I grew up in a big family, uh-huh. and it has positive and negative effects at the same time. The positive effect, you don't need friends because you have so many siblings.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, you will never ever have so many friends as you have your siblings. But
how many siblings did you have, by the way?
A lot, more than 10.
More than 10. Oh, okay. I come from 7 siblings, and I thought that was big, but you got me beat. So,
well, we're on the same page.
Yeah.
And then the downside, as you and me know, everyone grows up and they get in their own families and their own kids. And you kind of, not like alone, but you kind of like, you know, you're not surrounded, but that noise, exactly. And you know what I realized? Subconsciously, I was trying to recreate that family. Doesn't matter, like, this is probably I built like employee-owned companies all my life.
Yeah.
And this is why I look at the communities. Like, to be honest with you, like, video games 20 years ago, we were making enormous amount of money. We had enormous amount of users. But if you ask me today, what do I remember from that time? The only thing I really remember was these 6 people got married with each other in real life. And yeah. whatever I did back then changed the life of those 6 people, hopefully for good.
yes.
Yeah. So, and I think here's kind of the game when, you know, for me, it's almost like a family in a way. I'm trying to rebuild family. I just thought about that. I thought about our, you know, podcast today. And when I thought about it, I came to that conclusion, what exactly I'm doing. I literally rebuilding my family again and again. It doesn't work, but
I love this. It's a different layer to the conversation that I didn't realize we were going to be talking about today. You had mentioned community, but I guess I didn't understand the kind of the impact of it. Do you think this is what draws you to the aftermarket car modification, like to that community? Because I won't say that I'm a part of it, because I have never done many modifications to any of my vehicles, although I do like vehicles, especially fast ones. But but do you like the car community? I watch friends and they go to car shows and they're like drive their cars, you know, 100 miles down the freeway just to be in a, you know, in a, well, I don't even know what you'd call it, to go out on a Saturday drive together and to be a part of a community, or like,
right.
And when you start to think, and I've dealt with innovators and creative people my entire professional career, helping inventors, patent stuff specifically a lot. And I think, well, you've got this, like this community that loves cars, their lives kind of are centralized around the freedom that the cars give them. But then the added aspect is they're creators too, right? They're not just buying and driving, they're buying and creating the vehicle or the environment or the, you know, maybe the trophy that they want to show their friends. They're creators in addition to enthusiasts. And that adds, I think, a whole added level to the aspect of community.
You're right. It's a self-expression in a way. Yeah. So think about that. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, I want to bring this back because I don't know if we – I want to hear what happened because we started off talking about how you, the second or third year, whenever it was that you went to SEMA or, you know, you actually made a car and took it to SEMA with you, one that something right. you didn't have the first time you showed up but still had a lot of success. How was that different the year that you took your vehicle and people are saying, who's the manufacturer?
First of all, we almost killed ourselves on the way from Florida to Vegas many, many times because we never drove any trailers or anything. We met deers and different animals. It was kind of a terrifying experience.
In the car but, that you built?
Oh, no. I bought at that time, I bought a vehicle to pull and the trailer, and we loaded. All of us went together. I think my wife was, you know, we were trying to finish it right before SEMA. And, you know, it's never enough time to do these things. And I think I didn't sleep like 5 days before SEMA, like literally didn't sleep. And then I sat down at that giant truck and I'm driving. I think my wife, some of my friends already dead laying on a bench. And I think I drove 30 minutes and I said, you know, wife, if I'll drive any further, I think I will fall asleep. All of us will die.
Yeah.
And she's like, let me take the wheel. She's a very tiny person, but, you know, she just jumped in. And I think I woke up somewhere in Texas, you know, and it was like 12 hours she drove nonstop. And I think when I woke up, what I see, it's absolutely night. I don't know where I am. Our gas almost zero. And I think we have a deer in front of us. And the truck, giant truck on the left. And I think we like flying to the right side. She's flying to the right side. The truck, the giant truck, you know, like luckily didn't kick us. Otherwise, we would die. Giant jumps to the left. I mean, the giant truck, I don't know how did he stop. And we cannot even stop because if we will stop, someone will hit us behind us. So I think we stopped half mile away. And then we had to walk back just to make sure the guy who was driving the truck was alive and totally fine.
But
luckily, deer survived. The truck driver also was all right. Even his car didn't get hurt. But yeah, it was quite an experience. But when we went there, you know, I just didn't expect that much attention. You know, I felt like, okay, well, everyone going to take pictures. And you know, this was the expectation. Everyone going to take pictures.
Just fit in. Yeah. Everybody else has cars.
Yeah, everyone takes pictures. Maybe we'll end it up, you know, my top goal was like, oh, if you ended up on some podcast with some car enthusiast, that would be super cool.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, you know, not for business purpose, just for fun purposes. And and just when we went there, when people start to ask who manufactured that, we kind of got a little bit in confusion what to do. Then we got at that night, because the SEMA goes like 3-4 days, we got back to the hotel that night. And I said, guys, we need to create a brand right now, not tomorrow, right now. And until we're done, we should not even get up. So we sat on our computers and we had such a terrible hotel. It just was. But that hotel had a printer. So we figured out the name within probably 1 hour. We figured out the name. Then we made the website. And by I think it was 5 o'clock in the morning, we're like, all right, we have a name. We have a website landing page. We have some pictures there. Let's print out, because we didn't have any logotype. So we went to the lobby. We printed out logotype and literally used the scissors to cut out that little logotype and stick it in the car in the morning. And next morning, we just had people coming in asking who manufactured that.
Yeah.
What's the company making these cars? And we just start to, you know, get pre-orders. And that's how it happened. Kind of crazy, but
pre-orders so you built this as like a display car and took it there, and now people want to order it.
Yeah.
So did you actually sell cars? Did you actually end up making?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! So much to this story, Pete.
I never expected that. It never was the plan. It just was very strange, as it. But you know, looking back, as I mentioned before, it's a little bit easier to understand for the architect. You don't design the wall. You design the entire composition. Mm-hmm. And so, and I applied the same rules to the cars. And that's the major problem with the custom shops and, you know, people who come to SEMA. They create amazing part, like amazing bumper, amazing spoiler, whatever. And then they put it together. And it sometimes looks beautiful, but it looks random. Nothing random was about this car. And I think people, you know, they might not be able to express it, but they feel it. And I think that was the, you know, the difference. And yeah, it's what kind of surprise, but you know, I like cars, so it was a good, anyways.
That's fantastic. Oh man, so many questions are flooding through my mind, but they might be my questions, not necessarily questions the audience wants to hear. So man, this has been fascinating, Pete. I really appreciate you sharing all this. And I can see that there's so much more that we haven't talked about, but maybe need to reconnect for another episode in the future as you continue to grow. For people who are on a journey like yours, they've got the sleepless nights, they've got the last minute logo design or website design, they've got, you know, a background that's unique, an architectural background, and they're bringing it into a different industry like cars. Like for people who feel, you know, some relationship to your story, and they say, I feel like I'm a little bit like Pete. Like, what would be a lesson that you've learned along the way that you would hope to share with them and save them maybe some of the strain about learning that lesson on their own?
Whatever you want to do it today, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Because there's a, you know, maybe it's a little bit generic, but that's absolutely true. You're never going to be prepared. You learn along the way. So there's nothing wrong to try now. Then don't stuck, because sometimes you make decisions and, you know, sometimes they can be wrong and that's not okay. And then you just look at them, just be light on that. That's totally fine. Because at the end, at the core, it's not a company. Company is just it's literally letters printed out on the paper. There's nothing else. It's just people around in yourself. So in the core of your company, it's you. And because of that, you can retract at any time, whatever you do. And it's totally normal. And because in all my experience of building all the startups, I had to change something, and sometimes entirely. So mm-hmm. I think that's really important to be able to just retract and do something else. And I think also be open for an opportunity. Because sometimes just things happen and you need to act quickly. With the printer printing a little tiny piece of paper on a car, we never expected that. And when we seen the opportunity, we're like, why would we waste it?
Yeah.
And we acted quickly and it worked out. It could maybe not work out, but it did. So I would say act today. That's probably the most important.
I love that. I love that. Act today. Very timely advice for everybody who's building a business. Pete, this has been fantastic. It really has. I've really enjoyed it. And again, I've got so many intriguing questions that maybe I'll have to ask you offline at some point. But
totally.
For coming on the show, just want to say thank you very much. This has been a fascinating conversation, but also I think a really helpful one for our listeners to hear the journey that you've been on and some of the obstacles that you've dealt with and the, I think, maybe unique approach to finding solution to those problems. I think that's something our audience can take away from this episode.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for having me today, Jeff. It was my definite pleasure.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And thanks to our audience for joining us again on another episode of the Breakout CEO Podcast.
Be sure to follow or subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. And if you enjoy the show, a rating or a review goes a long way. Our mission is to promote the stories of breakout CEOs in scaling SaaS, e-commerce, and tech companies to equip peer CEOs with valuable perspectives and confidence. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of The Breakout CEO. I'm Jeff Holman, and I'll see you next time.